How much should the social cost of carbon cost? And what are all the bills California just passed? Welcome to the Climate Recap from the Beckosphere Climate Corner, your go-to place for international and U.S.-based climate news. I'm Becky Hogue, a climate communicator. Today is Monday, September 5th. Let's jump right into today's news. Let's start with some climate studies. New Zealand's National Institute of Water and Atmospheric Research reported that the country just had its warmest winter on record for the third straight year. The average temperature this season was 50 degrees Fahrenheit or 9.8 degrees Celsius, which is 1.4 degrees Celsius above the 1981-2010 mean. Meanwhile, the UK Meteorology Office determined that England's summer this year tied with 2018 for the hottest summer on record. The average temperature this summer was 62.8 degrees Fahrenheit or 17.1 degrees Celsius, and the country passed the 104 degrees Fahrenheit or 40 degrees Celsius threshold for the first time in history this year. This is in an area where air conditioning is very uncommon. 4 out of 5 of England's hottest summers have taken place after 2003, showing an escalation in the commonality of these events. England also had the 6th driest summer this year since records began in 1836, with the UK seeing only 62% of its average summer rainfall. For the UK as a whole, it saw its 4th hottest summer on record this year. We have a lot of climate victories today. Last Thursday, a South African court banned Shell from exploring oil and gas reserves along the country's eastern wild coast, claiming the exploration rights were granted illegally. The court said affected communities were not properly consulted and granting the rights didn't properly account for the impact on fisheries. This is a big deal because their exploration efforts involved conducting underwater explosions to locate deep oil and gas reserves. There are so many problems with doing this, from disrupting and destroying an ecosystem we know little about, contributing to fossil fuel expansion, and adding more noise pollution to the oceans. Noise pollution is a huge problem, particularly for marine mammals who rely on sound to communicate with each other. Shell briefly had access to explore 6,000 kilometers of South African seafloor. So this is a big win that they will no longer be allowed to explore the deep there. I missed this next climate victory story. On August 22nd, France became the first European country to ban fossil fuel ads. If companies run these ads anyways, they can be fined between $20,000 and $100,000, or 17,400 to 87,000 pounds. Campaigners like Greenpeace have been pushing for a ban like this for years, similar to restricting ads for tobacco products. There is an exception to this rule, though. Methane gas can still advertise likely until next June, when new rules are set to be put in place. There are also some loopholes like fossil fuel companies can still sponsor events. Critics of the ban say it makes it harder to inform consumers when petrol prices have dropped. While France is the first full country to do this, a similar ban was placed on fossil fuel ads in Amsterdam. Sydney, Australia is considering implementing a similar ban. These fossil fuel ad bans are important because often companies have greenwashed their products. In the U.S. last week, California passed a wave of new climate measures. We talked about one Saturday, which expanded the timeline of the Diablo Canyon nuclear plant by 5 years. And on August 26th episode, we talked about California's new law that bans new gas and diesel-powered cars and trucks from being sold in the state by 2035. Well, now state legislators passed a record $54 billion or 47 billion pounds in climate spending in the California Climate Crisis Act, which includes $6.1 billion for electric vehicles like school buses, $14.8 billion for transit, rail, and port projects, and $5.5 billion for wildfire protection and drought prevention and adaptation. I believe the $1.4 billion going towards keeping the nuclear plant open comes from this climate spending package too. California has now committed to reducing emissions to net zero by 2045, and this really requires the state to reduce emissions by at least 85% by 2045 and make up the rest through carbon offsets and direct air capture, which is quite a large percent to be taken up by those methods, in my opinion. California also finally required buffer zones between oil and gas operations and communities. Now fossil fuel facilities must be built at least 3,200 feet from homes, schools, and hospitals. It also creates stricter pollution rules for existing wells within that distance of facilities. Another bill passed requires regulators to establish guidelines for using carbon capture and storage technology. Other bills passed encourage denser housing in cities and lift requirements for parking spots to be built with new homes if they are located near public transit. It also provides a $1,000 refundable tax credit for Californians that don't own a car. These new laws will reduce the dependence on passenger vehicles. The only climate-related bill that didn't pass in this voting splurge would have strengthened the state's 2030 climate goals. The state is currently not on track to meet its 2030 goal of reducing emissions by 40% compared to 1990 levels by 2030. There's also another bill that hasn't been signed by Governor Newsom yet. Called the Community Renewable Energy Act, it would create an equitable community solar program that includes a solar plus storage combo. Right now, solar owners have an average income that is 58% higher than the state average, so this program is meant to address this inequality. Community solar allows for renters, which represents 45% of the state's population, or homeowners that can't afford rooftop solar, to still reduce their energy bill emissions. Governor Newsom has until September 30th to sign this bill into law. Meanwhile, last Tuesday, the Maine Supreme Court determined that a 2021 ballot measure seeking to block a 145-mile transmission line was unconstitutional because it was a retroactive ban. The New England Clean Energy Connect would deliver hydropower energy from Canada to New England. This ruling could bring back the possibility for the area to get Canadian hydropower, something that has been argued back and forth about 4 years now. Hydropower can be a stable form of clean energy as long as the drowned vegetation doesn't release a large amount of methane as it decomposes. Hydropower facilities in cooler areas that produce deeper lakes are less likely to produce methane emissions, so one in a northern space like Canada is cleaner than one built in South America, for example. But introducing new hydropower processes can still disrupt ecosystems that would have otherwise proved useful carbon sinks. So this energy source is a bit contentious for environmentalists and climate activists. This project in particular was being debated because the high voltage transmission lines will cut through Maine's unique forests. But this decision could mean this project is now back on the table to help Maine decarbonize its energy sector. This next news story is a gray space. Last week, Nigeria released a $10 billion pitch to international funders to lift 100 million people out of poverty by 2030, bring energy access to its whole population, and increase its clean energy portfolio to hit net zero emissions by 2060. Sounds great! The Rockefeller Foundation and the Global Energy Alliance for People and Planet have already provided funding. Obviously, $10 billion isn't enough to make it happen. The price tag is estimated at $410 billion, or 357 billion pounds. But it's a start. The problem is Nigeria wants to use gas as a major part of the transition. The president wants to significantly increase gas production over the next decade. On one hand, it's understandable, or it was when gas was cheaper. Wealthy countries developed using fossil fuels, so it wouldn't be fair to say developing countries can't, especially since they've contributed very little to historical emissions. At the same time, just air pollution alone has resulted in hundreds of thousands of deaths during wealthy countries' industrialization processes. Clean energy provides an opportunity for developing countries to uplift their populations while not sacrificing regional human and environmental health the way fossil fuels would. And that's not even talking about future global warming aspects. That being said, Nigeria also wants to significantly increase solar production to reduce people's reliance on diesel and petrol generators. The government wants to phase out those generators by 2050. Additionally, Nigeria wants to phase out all polluting cookware and replace it with electrical appliances by 2060. And it wants to transition to 100% electric vehicles by 2060. So hopefully, if gas use is increased over the decade, it will peak around 2030-2035 so the country can meet its decarbonization goals. Nigeria's Vice President Olsenbajo is heading to the U.S. this week to pitch the country's energy plan to funders. He is pushing wealthy countries to forgive poor countries' debts so they can use the freed up money to spend on decarbonization instead of relying even more on loans to do the job. Olsenbajo expressed this last Thursday in a DC speech at the Center for Global Development. He called for global countries to stop continuing the spending trend where 15% of the world's population, located in the wealthiest countries, are still receiving 40% of global energy investments, while 40% of the world's population, located in the poorest countries, are receiving just 15% of global energy investments. We have two climate fails today. A new study by the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis looked at the 50 years of carbon capture and storage history and determines that CCS projects are way more likely to fail than succeed. The researchers looked at 13 projects that represent about half of the world's current carbon capture capacity. 7 of those projects failed to take up as much carbon as intended. For example, the Boundary Dam CCS project in Saskatchewan, Canada, only captured half as much carbon as it was meant to. These 13 facilities currently take up 1/1,000th of the 36.3 billion tons of CO2 top emitters spewed into the atmosphere in 2021. Additionally, 73% of the carbon collected from the 13 projects was used to explore for more oil by fossil fuel companies. This is why fossil fuel companies and their sympathizers like CCS. This is exactly why I'm nervous about how much California's plants rely on this technology for fully decarbonizing. And now the Inflation Reduction Act will subsidize CCS connected to fossil fuel projects, even if the CO2 is then used for more exploration. Meanwhile, new research published in the journal Nature has concluded that the U.S. is underestimating the social cost of carbon by 3.6 times. This was a big study. It had 24 co-authors led by UC Berkeley and Resources for the Future scholars, with contributors from Princeton, the University of Washington, Harvard, and elsewhere. The social cost is the dollar calculation for the environmental health and social fallout of carbon dioxide's contribution to climate change. CO2 is the largest driver of global warming. The cost determines the historically largest emitters' climate policies like federal tax credits on carbon capture, vehicle emission standards, and carbon taxes. The U.S. currently puts the cost around $51 per metric ton, but according to the study, that number should be more like $185 per ton. This is not terribly new information, as a 2017 study said the same thing, but it's extremely important to put it back in the forefront of people's attention. Let's end today's episode with some good chemical news. Last Tuesday, a New Orleans appeals court rejected ExxonMobil's third appeal in a 12-year lawsuit brought by citizens. Environment Texas and the Sierra Club originally sued the company over its Gulf Coast facilities back in 2010 for releasing toxic air pollutants in over 16,000 events. Exxon has fought the lawsuit the whole way, but each appeals court has confirmed this suit is protected under the civilian suit provision of the Clean Air Act. The original court decision charged the fossil fuel giant almost $20 million for pollution, but the continuous appeal process has brought the fine down to $14.25 million or 12.4 million pounds. Still, that would be the largest ever fine resulting from a citizen enforcement of environmental law. Because Exxon has delayed implementing 4 emissions-reducing projects it promised to deploy back in 2012, the appeals court stated Exxon must spend $11.75 million in improvements to comply with the Clean Air Act. And that was your climate recap for Monday, September 5th. If you like the work I do, please follow this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, leave a review, and consider checking out the Becosphere Climate Corner YouTube channel. If you're on Twitch, I will see you in my stream from 9 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time today to talk about more climate news. Remember to talk about the climate crisis every single day and to support your local news organizations. Bye for now.